Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, it is Todd Nessaloni here. I'm Tech Ninja Todd on Twitter. We are on episode 22 of Edu All-Stars. My co-host today is...
I'm Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at I am Kessler.
And we are really excited about our guest this week. We have a fifth grade teacher out of Wisconsin, Pernille Rip. She is also a very popular online blogger, co-founder of EdCamp Madison, Wisconsin, and creator of the Global Read Aloud. So thank you, Pernille, for being here. We really appreciate you giving us some time today.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you know, one of the first things we always try to talk about our guests with and hear a little bit from them is about their educational background and how you got started in education. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I grew up in a family of teachers, so I knew that I didn't want to be a teacher because teachers were stupid. And I say that in all seriousness. I was the ultimate teenage rebellion, and whatever my wonderful, very patient mother wanted me to do, I was not going to do. So I knew I wanted to work with children, but I kind of had this social worker, maybe, I don't know, aspect in mind. And I was born and raised in Denmark, and we moved to Madison, Wisconsin when I was 18, and I kind of did the, oh, I'll go to college, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and after 3 months I dropped out because I was completely wasting everybody's time, and I started bartending, and so I did that for 3 years, and then I met my future husband, and one night he looked at me and he's like, so what are you going to do with your life? And I was like, well, what do you mean? This is great. I'm making great money. And that was the catalyst for me to get serious. And I realized that maybe my mom had been onto something, that I should be a teacher. And so I decided to go into education and quickly realized that I wanted to do elementary, or kind of that elementary middle school age. And so it took me almost 6 years. I had to work full-time and go to school full-time. And I haven't looked back since. It's been amazing. And I actually loved going back as an older student just because I brought in a little bit of a different experience. And I don't know, I was just really sure of what I wanted to do. I was a pretty focused university student, pretty hardcore at times. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up in education.
And so have you always taught fifth grade?
No, I started as a fourth grade teacher, and I loved it. And then there was an opportunity to move up to fifth in my school, and it was a really great team. And so I was excited about doing that. I'd student taught in fifth, and I just loved how my fourth graders ended up at the end, or at the end of the year. So I thought maybe that would be a good fit. And this is my third year in fifth grade, and I love it. It's a great grade.
So last month was Connected Educator Month in October, and you've amassed quite a following on Twitter. Can you just tell us a little bit about your kind of your quote Twitter journey, and just more importantly, your journey about, you know, becoming a connected educator?
Sure. I didn't set out to be connected, and I wrote a blog post for EdWeek talking about how I didn't realize I was unconnected until I got connected. I was your regular teacher bumbling along trying to figure everything out, and after 2 years of doing that, I was completely and utterly burned out and hated the way I taught and hated the classroom that I had created, and I knew that this was my chance to do something, and part of me thought that it was my chance to quit. And then I went home and told my husband, and he said, why don't you change it instead? And so I did, and I threw everything out. And because I'm extreme, apparently, and I knew I had to create a classroom that I would want to be in as a kid, not me as a teacher, but me as a kid. And I was a pretty willful child that had a lot of opinions, and so I needed to create a classroom where a kid like that would actually flourish. So as I was kind of reflecting and throwing everything out, my husband said, well, why don't you start a blog? Because you like to reflect on things. And I think he was trying to stop me from talking about it all the time to him. he knows me pretty well. And so I did. And of course, as most bloggers start out with, I didn't think anyone was going to read it. And I realized that it was just me putting it all out there, warts and all, and being really honest about it. At the same time, I got started using Twitter. I'd been on Twitter, I think everybody has, before they actually start using it. And the first person I followed was Lisa Nelson. and I still love her to this day. And she doesn't know this, but I kind of stole her Twitter list and started following people based on that. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the community that was out there and all of these people who didn't think I was crazy when I wanted to throw out grades or homework or punishment, and all of these people that just had all these ideas. And I felt like I came home, and I still do, and that's why I make time to blog and make time to tweet and make time to reach out to other people and help them whenever they need help, because I've been helped so much along the way, and I've been incredibly fortunate with the people that I've connected with. So I'm a huge Connected Educator fan in whichever way you're going to connect, whether it's through Twitter or whether it's just going and having coffee with someone else. You're just having a family outside of your family.
So, you know, that leads great into our next question is, you know, what advice do you give to teachers who may be afraid of connecting outside of their classroom?
I don't. Because when I do, people think I'm crazy. I think Twitter and social media is a natural, it's a journey you have to really take on your own, in a sense. I can show them things, and I will constantly tell people, oh, I learned this from so-and-so, or I know this person, or I've met this person. But I used to be this huge, like, you have to get connected, you have to be on Twitter, you have to do this. And I think I scared people off, because it just is, it's frightening. Twitter is incredibly frightening when you first start. It's overwhelming. You don't think you're cool enough to hang with the cool people with all the followers, and the whole world can see what I wrote. And so now I just kind of lead by example instead. And if somebody comes to me and says, how do I do this? Then I give them all my time in the world and I take them under my wing. But yeah, no, I've stopped running after people saying you must get connected, because I think we end up really alienating people that way.
Yeah, we've had a similar experience on our campus this year. It was kind of encouraged that we all jump on Twitter at the beginning of the year by the principal, and I thought that was a great thing. I felt like that was really a good idea, but then you just start hearing people in the hallways like, really, yeah, we got to do this freaking Twitter thing, and da, 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 da. And it just, I don't know, I started thinking about it, like, what we're asking these people to do is go home after you get off work and continue to learn on your own time. And I don't know, I guess that just doesn't resonate with everyone. I personally love doing that, but I can see someone else saying, no chance in heck I'm going to do that. So I thought that's pretty good advice. It's out there if you want to explore it. Here it is, but you know, we're not going to force anyone to do it. And he hasn't been forceful at all, but I should be clear about that. But
well, and like you said, it's all about leading by example. And so if I know that on our campus, you know, the way we try to encourage it is that it's just constantly saying, when people say, where'd you get that idea? Or how were you able to do that? It's me saying, well, you know, I'm connected here, and I know this person here, and it's because of this. And then enough times after seeing that, those teachers who are those teachers that want to step up and do more and learn, and that are natural, just inquisitive people, they will slowly buy in because they see the value because of what you're doing.
Exactly, and I think, like, we can't make Twitter homework. Because that's what it becomes. Because then it's just going to be just like us when we got homework. We're going to go, well, fine, I'll do it, but only to get it done.
Right.
And that can't be what Twitter is about. You really have to dedicate the time to make those connections. Because, sure, you can go on there and try to get a ton of followers, but that's not what Twitter is really about.
Right. So you do some work with Edmodo, and I know you presented at EdmodoCon. How did that come about, and what was that like?
That was awesome. I love Edmodo because of the Global Read Aloud and just the platform it provides us. And so when I saw that they had submission calls, whatever that's called, I was like, well, sure, I'll write in. And it was really easy, which made me happy, because you only had to write a couple of lines. So I was shocked when they picked me. I'm expecting my fourth child right now, because we love children in my house, and unfortunately I was not able to actually fly out there, because that was part of the package. My pregnancy has been pretty complicated. So they were really sweet enough to then just live bring me in, and it was amazing, because it was truly a global event where all of these educators around the world were wondering how could they get involved with everything that they wanted to get involved with. And it also allowed me to just sit down and really talk about the Global Read Aloud and how that started, and how you can take any idea and create a global collaborative project with it using Edmodo or Twitter or any kind of social media. So it was a really neat event, and they have been so supportive of me and of the Global Read Aloud, and they're just the nicest people ever. I mean, most of them are ex-teachers, so you got to love that.
Yeah. So I used Edmodo for 1 year with sixth graders, and you use it with fifth graders. And one of the things I found were that they really just don't know how to interact with each other online as far as, like, the commenting system. And it would be just a lot of these one-word comments like, hey, yes, mm-hmm. whatever. And so how do you teach kids to be better at that?
Well, the biggest part was that I told them that every time they write something, I get an email. And uh-huh. they didn't believe me, so I pulled up my email, and I had 23 emails with them going, anyone on? Hey, what are you doing? And I was like, seriously, guys, you're killing me. We use it mostly to collaborate with other classrooms, and so I think because my students are amazing, incredible bloggers, and we really talk about, like, how do you start a conversation with people, they transfer that naturally over to Edmodo. But if you ask my kids, they'd rather blog than do Edmodo. So in my actual classroom, we only use it to collaborate with others. Like, we don't use it in our classroom community because we don't need it. We spend all day talking to each other. And so for most of the kids now, I notice they'll go on and be like, what did you do for Halloween or something like that? And I'm okay with that because it gives them one more social outlet.
What platform do you use for your kids to blog on?
I am, like, the biggest fan of KidBlog ever.
KidBlog, okay.
I think they have created such an incredible product for anybody to start blogging with their student, the safety features, but how I can completely open it up to anyone. And just, it's like they are, Matt and the guys on KidBlog are just so tuned in with what teachers want for kids, particularly at elementary level where blogging can seem incredibly frightening and scary for parents and for administrators. And they are so willing to change and adapt and grow, and they really have. I mean, that's who I started with because that was what I thought would be easy for me, and I have just grown to love it more and more and more every year. I mean, you would think I get paid, and I don't at all. I just think it's such an amazing product, and it's free.
Yeah.
And how many products are still free for teachers? I mean, they lure us in, and then all of a sudden it costs money, and they're still free, and you can still get the full experience using their free product.
Didn't they link it up with Google Apps for Educators, like accounts, Gmail accounts, student Gmail accounts?
They might have. I can't remember. We don't use that because we have problems with some email accounts there. But they've made it, like, every year it just gets better and better and better.
Cool.
Now, you mentioned the Global Read Aloud. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that? Because I know you started that.
Sure. We are actually finishing on Friday. This is the fourth year in its existence, and it started out super easy, listening to NPR, again, with my wonderful, amazing husband, Brandon, and I talking about how cool it would be if you took a book and connected it to the world for kids. And instead of just talking about how cool it would be, he said, well, why don't you do that? So I did. But I didn't know it was going to get this big, and I wrote a blog post in July 2010 and just said, how cool would it be if we all read the same book and then connected? And I didn't realize that people were going to tweet me and go, sure, how do we do that and where do we sign up? And I didn't know. And so I winged it, and I winged everything. And I've been winging it ever since. And so that first year we were about 600 students globally that read The Little Prince and just connected during 4 weeks. And this year, I believe we're almost at 150,000 students connecting through four different books, six continents, and 4,000 different facilitators. And it has just been completely, utterly, mind-blowingly amazing to see this little thing grow and to see the connections that kids are making across the world reading the same book. And we've been so lucky that last year, Catherine Applegate, who wrote The One and Only Ivan, got involved with the project on her own accord and really made it her own. And this year, I know, and that was really like one of those holy cow moments, especially when Ivan then went on to win the Newbery. I was like, can we do that again? Can we pick a Newbery winner again? But this year, Kate Messner, who wrote Marty McGuire, has been so gracious with her time. She's one of our books. And Jeff Herbach, who's a proud Wisconsinite who wrote Stupid Fast for high schoolers and up, has just been incredible. And tomorrow we have our culminating event with Sharon Draper, who wrote Out of My Mind. And she's doing her first ever Google Hangout Live just for this group of kids around the world. And Yeah, it's crazy. And I never knew. I didn't think it was going to get this big. So
it's amazing.
Hey, social media.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Find people.
What about books that you're reading? Any education books that you favor, really enjoy, or anything you're reading right now that you want to talk about?
I'm terrible with education books, only because I read so many blogs that, you know how it is, like, then people come out with a book and you're like, I read that, and it was amazing. a couple that have really shaped the way I think, obviously, is anything by Alfie Kohn, because he finally gave me the research to back up that maybe homework wasn't the best fit for my kids, and neither was punishment and testing and all of that stuff. So I always go to Alfie Kohn. And then Donalyn Miller's The Book Whisperer. She was really the one that gave me the courage to just say, we're going to read because we love reading. And reading should be about passion and choice. And it should be one of the most important things in our lives. And that was the push I needed to go, I'm right. This is what my intuition was telling me. So that's about it for education books. I mean, there's other incredible ones out there for sure. And then other than that, I just read. I read a lot.
Well, then I'm going to ask you the question that's probably going to be impossible for you to answer, but if you had to pick your favorite book that you've ever read, what book would you quote?
No, you can't.
It's like picking between your children, isn't it?
It is. Or it's like, well, where am I going and what am I in the mood for? Mm-hmm. I think there's certain ones that will always stand out. You know, like The Little Prince has taken on so many different meanings for me throughout my life, so that's a huge one. And then there's books that I now read to my oldest daughter from my childhood that means a lot to me and gets me teary-eyed. But I think the amazing thing with books is that amazing books are published every single day. And it's just our job to find them and bring them into our classroom. And honestly, yeah, I love all sorts of books. But particularly, like, fifth grade boy favorites are kind of in my too, so it works out really well. Anything sci-fi, I'm there.
Have you read The Giver?
I finally read it.
I've got to ask, because that's one of my favorite books of all time. So
that's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, I loved it, but I was like, and then I had a good discussion with a kid on the first day of school where they were like, yeah, they die. Absolutely. And it was great because I was like, I finally read it. Like,
well, you know, they're making a movie about it now, too.
I know, but isn't that going to be the weirdest movie ever? Like,
yeah, I was thinking, I can't wait to see it, but I'm like, how are they going to do some of the stuff with the book?
Totally change the ending and be like, oh, it's great. Here's the sequel.
Exactly. Well, you know, I know you've mentioned this a lot, but you blog quite a bit, and your blog is really popular with a lot of teachers, and I think a lot of it deals because of your honesty, and you've got strong opinions, but you have great reasons for your strong opinions to back them up. And so have you always been a writer at heart?
I think I've always tried, but I think my mom would tell you that I wrote a lot of really terrible poetry as a child. A lot of depressive, you know, about the wind and the leaves and how I felt. I only write when I'm inspired, which is a terrible way to blog. And there's a lot of really terrible posts that people thankfully never notice. But I think it's just writing from the heart. And I think as educators, it's terrifying to go, this sucks, or this lesson bombed. But I think those have been some of my better moments where I've said, you know what, it's okay to show others that my classroom isn't perfect and that even the best well-laid plans can blow up in my face, or not all of my students think I am amazing, or I yell at my students sometimes. I needed that when I was a new teacher. I needed someone to say, it's okay, you don't have to have all the answers. It's okay, you're going to have really tough days, but you're going to have these incredibly amazing, just heart-wrenching moments too. And so I guess I just decided that I was going to show it all. And I think one thing my mom will tell you is that I've always been honest and I've always been a sharer. So apparently that's coming through in my writing.
Now, you're also working on a book, aren't you?
I am. I should be like, I read all these education books and you should read mine. if I was smart about it. I am. I have been so fortunate to work with Powerful Learning Press, and they were just kind of like, yeah, write us a book about how you can change your classroom and give it back to students. And I said, is it okay if it's just like a how-to book, like just ideas, try this, try that, try this, try that. And they were like, yes, that's what we want. And so the last year we've been working on it. Hopefully it'll be out before Christmas. But it's just been, I'm so sick of it because I've read it so many times. And I'm like, these ideas are terrible. Nobody's going to want to read this. But my editor, John, has been very kind and said, no, there's good stuff here, and there are ideas for people. So it's really just, it's called Passionate Learners, giving your classroom back to your students starting today, because that's what it's about. It's about the kids. And I wanted to show people that even in a public school system, with all of those kids we get in the public school system, under the Common Core, under all the standardized testing, it's possible to have a student-centered classroom, and it's possible to throw out ways we teach and really give education back to kids. And so that's why I wrote the book. It's short. It's short. I like short books.
Yeah, who doesn't? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's hoping to be out before Christmas, you said?
Yes, that's what they're hoping for. So.
Great.
So we'll get back to passion learning in just a second, but I just wanted to comment on your the design of your blog. It just has a really clean, like iOS 7 feel to it. It's really, really nice looking. Is that a WordPress blog or?
It is. I was married to Blogger for a long time.
Really?
And then I realized that I didn't like that I couldn't do sub pages, and that was the only reason I went to WordPress. And I'm Scandinavian, so the house we live in, which you can see behind me, is not our style at all. We've been meaning to move out of here for a long time. It's a log cabin. That's not my style. But so for me, everything should be white walls and lots of small rooms and you know, nothing around. So at least I can get that fantasy world on my blog,
yeah,
which I really like. So
yeah, very, very clean, pretty. So back to passion learning. I noticed you're doing Genius Hour or did Genius Hour. I just saw a post about it recently. Talk about that experience.
Well, I've been doing Innovation Day, which is a full day of Genius Hour, for several years, inspired by Josh Schumpenhorst, and have been doing it with fourth and fifth graders. And so a couple years ago, people started talking about doing like 20% time or Genius Hour, and I thought, how cool, because I wanted a way for kids again to show me what they were interested in and what they wanted to do. So for those of you who don't know what Genius Hour is, it's super easy. It's basically giving kids an hour in whatever class you're teaching to work on whatever they want. And it's been a real natural fit for social studies and science in my room, where if we're studying something, because we're on a spiral curriculum in fifth grade, like Native Americans, which is what we were just doing, they've had that before, so I need something to keep it fresh. So often I'll be me giving them some background, and then the following class period, they get to create whatever they want underneath that term of whatever we're studying. And it was so cool to see. And the thing is with Genius Hour, the first one's always going to be a mess. Because you have kids I had kids that brought in these incredible posters and displays that they created at home, where they probably driven their parents absolutely bonkers asking them for supplies. Or then you have kids show up and they have no clue what they're going to be doing or how they're going to do it, and they end up just creating this crazy little thing. But then after the first one, they get it. And they get excited about it, and they get excited about seeing what their friends and classmates are researching. And just to see them take control of their own learning in such an easy way is amazing. And so if you can incorporate Genius Hour into anything, I would. And we do it like sporadically throughout the year. Some people do it like every week, which I think is incredible. But we've got too much to cover for me to do it every week. So,
any standout projects that you had? Maybe a couple you'd think of?
Oh, absolutely. I had two kids create Jamestown in Minecraft.
Oh, cool.
That was really cool. This year I had some
Wow,
kids
that's awesome.
Yeah, like seriously. And this was like before Minecraft was cool in education. This was a couple of years ago. I still have it saved somewhere. I had a kid, one kid was weaving this year to show Native American ways of weaving. I had other people just creating these really cool, like, longhouses and teepees and just working the way they wanted to work. And I thought that was what was so neat. And pushing themselves to go, this is what I want to learn about. And then the food. I love it when kids bring in food.
Yeah, of course.
One of our senses. And they're like, oh, yeah, they did this. And they know all these random facts. And you're like, I would have never covered that. I would have never covered that. So.
Yeah, cool.
Well, you know, the last part of the interview, we like to move into more questions, just thinking about you and you and where you've been. And if you could go back 5 or 10 years and give yourself a piece of advice, what advice would you give yourself?
Trust yourself, I think. I think we as teachers think that we have to fulfill a certain role. We have to be a certain kind of personality, and we have to teach a certain way. And I think if I'd started out teaching by trusting myself and listening to that voice in myself, I think it would have been a better start for me. And then I think be nice. I think you get so much further being kind to people, and I think that's from wonder. You know, when you have the choice to choose right or choose kind, always choose kind. And I think that has really been a motto of mine for a couple years. Just be nice and push for change, but push for change in a nice way. That doesn't mean you can't keep doing it and driving people crazy, but you can do it in a respectful manner and still get somewhere. So.
So is this question always kind of trips people up, but has there been a time in your career when you've fallen flat on your face or made a mistake that you've really kind of learned from it?
Absolutely. Oh, all the time. All the time. And I think that's why we're teachers.
Yeah.
Because if we can then go in and ask a kid for forgiveness, or if we can go in front of our class and say, I really messed this lesson up, and I actually told you something wrong, which I have done in the past. I've taught kids the wrong concept. And I think then that's how you grow, or just in life in general. If you wrong someone, oh, yeah, yeah, a lot. And I think we're so afraid of showing that. I think we think that we should be perfect and that we should have an answer for every single situation that is ever thrown at us. And so we make stuff up really quickly. And I think it's okay to just say, I don't know. I'll figure it out, or, yeah, no clue, and then finding other people that are smarter than you.
So if you had a chance to chat with a teacher who was just getting started in their career, what advice would you give to a brand new teacher?
Make it about the students. And that people are always like, well, it is about the students. Well, no, it's not. And there's so many ways that you can make it about the students. So the first thing is ask the students how they want to learn. Because even in our test-obsessed, standards-obsessed curriculum there in North America, there's a place for student voice, and that student voice, even when they're young, even when they're in kindergarten, first grade, and you think that they don't know what they should know, ask them, because they will be your greatest teachers, and it's my students that make me a better teacher. It's my students that push me into thinking, how can I make this better? And I don't think as new teachers we think about that. I know I didn't. I thought about control and all of my rules and how I was going to make sure they followed all of those rules. And I think we, you know what, include the students right away.
I just want to go back to, you said hang around people smarter than you. I read this quote, or actually I heard it on this. I listen to this entrepreneur podcast on the way to work sometimes, and one of the guys said this morning, you are the average of the 5 people you hang around the most. And I was thinking, oh, I'm in deep trouble then.
Yeah.
Todd brings my average up, but I got other friends that bring it way down. So.
I think we all have some of those friends in our lives.
I think that's important, though.
Yeah, it is. I need to get a new top 5 or something.
Or pretend that they're much better than they are.
That's right, yeah.
But I completely agree with that, though, as that's what I love about being a connected educator, is I feel like it's made me that much better because I'm able to surround myself with types of people that I may not have normally come into contact with in my life. And so yeah. I love that you bring that up. Yeah.
Is it my turn? Yeah, yes. It is. Okay, sorry. So what are you really passionate about, like, right now? Not tonight, but in meditation, maybe.
This moment.
Yeah, right now, students, my students. I have the most incredible, amazing 5th graders, and I have had the most incredible, amazing students every year, and I don't know if I'm just the luckiest person in the world, but these kids continue to blow me out of the water with their honesty, their reflection, and how hard they work to change the world. I have somehow gotten them to actually understand that they have a voice that matters, and they are putting their thoughts out there. They're blogging this week about standardized testing, and they are being brutally honest as to their opinions, and I am so proud of them. So every day I'm passionate about children, my own children, which when they get older, they will probably think I'm nuts and hate me for it, but my fifth graders are out to change the world, and I'm so just proud and humbled that I get to be a part of their journey every single day. And then I'm just passionate about lifting other people up and getting female educators out there and getting them a voice. No offense, males. There's a lot of you out there saying a lot of things, and we need some more really strong female leaders out there too, and they're out there. We just got to find them.
Yep, for sure.
Well, you know, I love that you're that passionate about your students. I mean, it's always it's really encouraging to hear how you can hear in your voice how proud of your students you are. And so I love hearing that kind of passion come out of somebody.
I forget to tell them, though. So I told them today, I said, I'm doing an interview tonight, and I just need to remind you before I tell the people how awesome you are. And they're so cool about it in fifth grade. They're like, well, yeah, we know we're awesome.
And, you know, that's a good point. I think some of us forget to remind our students how much we think of them because we tell other people so much, but sometimes we don't ever tell them. It's kind of like those people we love in our lives the most. Sometimes we don't tell them how much they mean to us.
Exactly.
So that's a good point.
It's funny, I'm going to a conference tomorrow, and so I'm actually giving a test in my class, so the substitute's having to give a test, and I wrote this kind of like pep speech for the sub to read and just say, you know, it's from me, and I was so like honest, and I'm like, oh my gosh, but I'm never really this honest with them when I'm face to face. It's like, but this pep talk, they're going to maybe get tears when they hear this thing.
You know? But you know that they're just going to be like, whatever.
Or whatever, yeah, this guy's a jerk.
I was like, I made you this amazing video, blah, 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 and the parents were like just crying over this video, and I showed it to the kids, and their kids were like, uh-huh, that's great. Whatever, good lady.
Well, Pernille, we wanted to thank you so much for coming on with us tonight. It has been great to finally get to meet you and hear a little bit more about you and your story. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you.
And for those of you that are listening, we just want to remind you that some ways that you can connect with us are on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is EduAllStarsHQ. We sometimes tweet with the hashtag EduAllStars. You can follow the website, EduAllStars.com, with all the other 21 interviews in addition to this one. And if you are one that likes to subscribe to podcasts on iTunes, you can also find us there by searching EduAllStars with no spaces, one word.
And Pernille, we want to give you a chance to watch it. Or speak your blog. What's the name of your blog? I'm like posts, tweet, but speak. Can you tell us what your blog name is?
Sure. It's Blogging Through the Fourth Dimension, and it's just PernilleRip.com. Keep it easy. And if you Google me and you get pretty close to my name, stuff will come up, and you can find all of my random blogs and connections and all that. So, yeah, easy.
Yeah, awesome.
Twitter, same way, PernilleRip. There isn't anybody else with my name. So it's nice.
Well, so next week we are excited about our superintendent we're going to have on. So this will be our first perspective from that kind of place of authority in education. So we're excited to have him on. And then Chris?
And then lastly, we just encourage you, if you've gotten this far, to subscribe via iTunes so you can get the newest episodes when they come out, and then leave a rating and some feedback in there. It definitely helps with the rankings. I'm kind of upset when I went and looked to see us getting beat by like really cruddy podcasts out there that are dedicated to, just like really, really poor podcasts. And I'm like, come on, we got to rank higher than these guys.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Pernille. Come on, this is going to be our biggest hit yet.
Right,
oh, no.
We need to rate us. Rate
so
us up
sorry.
There.
But thanks, guys, and we will be back next week at 8 p.m. Central on Wednesday.